from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host Mike Dempsey and Ryan O'Halloran.
I hope we're not trying to foreshadow Cecil Shorts having an amazing performance this week against the Jacksonville Jaguars. Wouldn't that be just the such the most Jaguar thing ever, Ryan, if that were to happen?
We were talking about that yesterday in the media room. We're saying 12 for 140 and 2.
Right.
And then he at the end of the game, he puts a Texans flag at midfield. That would be the most Jaguar thing ever.
It would be a very Jaguar thing, it would seem, just based on the way the season has gone to this point in time. And then we would be flooded with calls early part of next week. I knew they should have kept Cecil Shorts right
now. I was saying.
Of course, Cecil Shorts last week couldn't play because that has been his M.O. throughout his career. He's not always available to you, and that's why they didn't want to invest a lot of money into him. And look, again, Tony and I talked about this a good bit yesterday. They're not missing wide receiver production right now. The top two guys are producing very, very well for them. And look, you could always add more, and it'd be great to have, you know, Randall Cobb, who they set out to bring in, and things like that. But that's not the area that's hurting this team right now.
No, it's not. Hearns and Robinson both on pace for 1,200-yard seasons.
Which is fantastic.
Fantastic.
You know, second-year players with a second-year quarterback, that's very good.
Alan Hearns, if he gets 100 this week, third straight game. That hasn't happened here in 11 years.
Wow.
Since Jimmy Smith in 04.
How about that?
Yeah. It took me a long time to look that up.
Man, did you go seriously? What did you do? Did you go game by game to search that?
I went to a page that you can have all the receivers game by game within a season. So yeah, okay. Holy crap! I'm at 2007. Whoa!
Keep going, keep going.
But
keep going.
You know, and it's just the lack of 100-yard games overall, regardless of a streak. But yeah, they don't miss Cecil Shorts. But they also, I mean, there's so many other things to talk about this week. You know, his home, you know, he's back, very popular player.
He found
a good landing spot. He's being productive for them. He's supposed to play on Sunday. But if I'm the Texans offense, I'm looking forward to playing this Jaguar defense.
You can't let Brian Hoyer come in here and get you, right? I mean, he came off the bench and threw for over 300 last week against Indy. We know he's capable of it. And I know Jaguar fans look at last year and say, this guy's garbage. But he is capable of playing like garbage as well. He is one of those quarterbacks that is very inconsistent, and that's why he's bounced around the league this much.
Yeah, I mean, you know, hot and cold. The cold is why he's bounced around. His hot streaks are why he's able to bounce around.
Exactly. Continues to get jobs.
Sounds clumsy, but you know, I think a key for this Jaguar defense is you look at last year's game. They only blitzed Hoyer five times out of 40-some dropbacks, two sacks, two interceptions. So I think he may be a little skittish under pressure like a lot of guys are, but you know, I would try and challenge them.
Can they get pressure is the question.
Well, it's not going to be with four because they haven't done that the whole year.
No.
You look at last week on the fumble that was called back that Winston did, Jonathan Cyprian blitzed from the corner, blew up the running back. On the sack that lost like 19 yards, Aaron Colvin lined up between the tackle and the end, unblocked sack. Give me some more of that to see.
Sure. The rest of it's not working. They pick you apart.
Yeah. You know, if you have an unblocked man, then you can play man coverage because it's going to happen quick.
Right.
So, I mean, this is still a secondary that doesn't have an interception in five games. Paz has the only one overall. So, you know, it's two defenses on Sunday who haven't been able to produce takeaways. Maybe something will break.
How much of the lack of run defense do you think was directly attributable to Puzlesny? Because, look, even if he were out there, just tons of missed tackles, and that's not all on Armbrister.
Mm-hmm. Correct. I mean, Thurston was down the list in terms of tackles missed. His problems were in coverage. But you hear them try to defend the run defense, and they say, well, it was in the wrong guys lined up, the wrong fits. Well, that's inexcusable. This far into the season, you can obviously Puzlesny is important, but Paul Puzlesny doesn't play the three technique. He doesn't play the defensive end position. It was getting pushed back. Chances are, the way the Bucs were blocking, they would have been out and accounted for him. So I think that was a very, very small part of what went wrong.
Really, that small? Because I do think it had to have some impact on the game. But you're right. We talked with Logman earlier in the week. You watch it on film, and at times it seemed like the entire defensive line was getting knocked back a yard or two right at the snap.
Yeah, and the concerning thing when you watch it is the angles that some guys took, it looked like preseason. Telvin got himself out of position a couple of times. Telvin saved at least two touchdowns by running down guys downfield, so that's a plus. He can get down there, but Cyprian, terrible game. Sergio Brown, terrible game. Sergio's lucky that James Sample isn't healthy because his days as a starter would be over.
Right now, I guess then Cyprian would have to be lucky that Sergio is not playing well because, you know, I think Sample has his pick of jobs right now if he were healthy, right?
Yeah.
He could help you in either spot at the moment. Yesterday we talked about what is the one missing ingredient. What's the one most important? There are a lot of things missing when you're 1-4, okay? But to me, it wasn't a player or an aspect of the coaching staff or anything like that. It's simply consistency. Week in, week out.
It was across the board bad.
But you had areas that were good this week. Now, we've talked about red zone offense, not converting field goal opportunities into touchdowns, right? And they did that last week. They did that very well last week. And you also, we've harped on scoring after halftime. Well, they did that last week. So there were areas that in the past had been issues for them that they kind of rectified at least on a 1 week basis, but other areas sprung leaks.
Well, I think the biggest thing you look at is if just within this game, they're down 20-7 and it looked like they're laying down. But they respond to that adversity and they take a lead. Okay. They're still in the lead. Corey Grant has the fumble touchdown. That's adversity. Three and out. Game over.
Right. It was a one score game at that point in time.
It was. So given the chance, I mean, they have to do it. That's the consistency thing is this team is going to face a ton of adversity during the course of the game. They're just not that good. So they're going to face challenges.
You got to find out a way to overcome it.
So they did it once, and they couldn't do it a couple of times.
We'll talk about everything the Jags needed to get their second victory of the season coming up this weekend. As they take on the Houston Texans, we'll hear from Gus Bradley, we'll hear from Blake Bortles, their midweek press conferences taking place yesterday. John Harris going to join us, sideline reporter for Houston Texan Radio and Texans TV, as well as he works for HoustonTexans.com. He'll check in with us in hour number two. Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran, Fat Tony here with you. Question of the day, brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships, is which injured player do the Jags need back the most this week? And really think about this now. Denard Robinson, Cedric Marks, Paul Posluszny, okay? If you get Marks back, you're not going to get him for a full workload, but clearly you could use him. If you get Posluszny back, as you said, maybe that doesn't fix all the issues that they had stopping the run last week. And Denard, well, right now,
that's my pick.
With TJ Yeldon, you know, nursing that groin injury, and we'll talk about Gus's reaction when he was asked yesterday in the press conference about, you know, TJ. He may be your starter this week at running back, so they all have reasons why you would feel that they would be important to return. A lot of people answering all the above. Try to pick one.
Right? Pick one.
Clearly, they could use all these guys back and more, but out of those options, which one is more crucial to the Jaguars trying to secure a victory? That question brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships, asking Jaguar fans daily, what drives you? 641-1010 is the phone number if you'd like to get in. It's also the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. We'll get your reaction coming up. We'll hear from Gus. We'll hear from Blake, Ryan O'Halloran, Fat Tony, Mike Dempsey here with you. We're live at Everbank. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Well, I just thought I saw him strain more, and I think I see him, you know, kind of fighting through that block a little bit and gain confidence in it. So I think it was a big step for him today.
That's Gus Bradley talking about Cedric Marks and what he was able to do on the practice field yesterday as looking to get out on there for his first action of the season against the Houston Texans. Of course, tore his ACL in Week 17 last year, so puts him right on pretty much a normal timetable to return. But as we also know, Ryan, normal when you return usually means not at the same level that you left, at least that first season back. And I would expect that to be the case for Cedric Marks for the rest of the year. He's going to be trying to play himself back to the player he was in 2014.
Yeah, 9 months, 17 days between injury and first full practice. and you're right, you know, getting back is the like is not the final step. You know, the final step is playing games and getting back to what you hoped to, what you were before. See if you can get back to that level. So I think the Jaguars are going to be smart with him. They did not want to put him out there in the last couple weeks just for 10 snaps. They wanted to make sure he's ready for a more significant role when he does become active. So I would expect him to play, 25 to 30 snaps. I think they should put him in on some third downs, especially see if they can just get some push up the middle.
What do you know about Parnell with the knee injury missing practice yesterday?
This is his first practice that he missed this year. Gus said that it's looking good for Sunday. We'll just have to go on that because today will be no pads. Tomorrow will be a walkthrough. Yesterday was pretty much the only practice.
Okay. All right. We'll keep an eye on that. There's a number of guys out at practice yesterday. Let's hear a little bit from Gus Bradley yesterday following practice on the state of the Jags, including Luke Belanco, who was limited in practice with what is described as a stinger. And here's Gus on Luke. Oh.
Well, he did good. Belanco, when I saw him in one-on-ones, he played some guard, played some center, played some tackle today. That's tough on him. And I thought he's come along now. He had a good week of practice last week. So we'll take a look at it on tape. But he's doing a good job.
Interesting first cut to play because it was their third right tackle. Because I asked them, because they said Sam Young didn't finish practice because he was sick. So I said, okay, Parnell was injured. Young started the practice and didn't finish. Who was up next? And he said Belanco. So that's how Luke came up.
Got it. And that's how. And so apparently, despite the fact that he was listed as a limited participant, didn't seem like a major concern there. He's, according to Gus, playing all over the place yesterday.
By necessity,
right. And he's got that versatility.
Gus Bradley yesterday after practice also talking about who was getting the first team reps for them at running back in practice.
Well, we don't know with TJ. TJ was out there for walkthrough and stuff, but he didn't go through any practice this afternoon. And the first guy that went out there was Toby.
So Toby Gerhart, what would you think is, let's say TJ, worst case scenario, TJ Yeldon can't play this week, okay? But Denard is active because he did get a full practice in. So how would you expect the running back duties to be split between Gerhard and Denard?
I throw Gerhard, Denard, and Grant. I think Toby will take a lot of the snaps because he is healthy. So if you divide it up, maybe 60-30-10.
Okay.
Is that up to 100?
No, but it's
no, it does. Yeah, it does.
Does it?
60-30-10? Hey, well, I'm a math man.
When you started rolling your eyes and thinking, I'm like, I'm not going to add them up. Man. I'm going to go no. I got a good shot at this one.
So I figured they'd probably go with Toby early on and work Denard in. But getting Denard back, even if he can only give them 5-6 carries, that is a benefit.
Give him a little burst back there and a little dependability.
Pulse.
Yes, they need it. Gus talking about the benefits of having Julius Thomas practicing in full again.
You look back and he got hurt the first preseason game. So just to get back in the mix of things, I think the weeks that he couldn't catch and he was on the field was good, but there's nothing like going through it and then the number of plays that you get. And we're hoping that's great benefit to him and us.
Well, the big plus there is that Bortles is out there with Thomas because it does – just to get on the same page a little, because like Gus said, they haven't been on the field together.
Right, and for Blake was like, what? Who's going to miss practice? I practice in full. I talked with Julius yesterday, and you'll hear the conversation coming up on the pregame show on Sunday, and he's still got that athletic tape kind of on the back of his hand just to keep everything tight. And so he walked in the door, stuck out my hand, and he goes, still going left hand on the handshakes, which, I obviously being cautious about it, and that's smart to do, but it makes me wonder, Ryan, are you limited on how you can line him up? Because I don't know if you can line him up tight to the formation. If he doesn't want to shake my hand with the right hand, does he want to try to get a chip on J.J. Watt, Jadeveon Clowney with that hand?
That would be a no.
I would think not, right? I would think he's only going to be split out wide in the formation if you got him out there.
Yeah, the only time I saw him block against Tampa was on the touchdown, I think, to Allen Robinson, where he stayed in protection just, and sort of jolted the guy and then ran out to an outlet route. So I asked Greg Olson that yesterday. Does the hand limit from what you can do in terms of where you line him up in the run game? et cetera? And he said, absolutely. So you almost have to line them up there just so you're not so predictable, though.
Right.
Yeah, I had a lot of fans when the game started. They're like, why is he active if he's not in there on first and second down? I was like, well, they ran the ball on first and second down, guy. He's
paying customers.
Right. He's out there to be a pass catcher. They're not going to expose him if they don't
have to.
Gus Bradley yesterday also after practice.
On
Toby Gerhart and the contribution or lack thereof that he's made this year.
Here's a challenge for Toby. Toby is playing a lot of special teams, and then he goes in there in certain situations as a running back. And, I think he's getting acclimated to that. Here he is running down, the field and punt and kick off and, probably something that he hasn't done much. So I think he's getting used to that and then also transferring over. So there's a little bit of a time period there, adjustment period. But he practices good, and I think, this is a time for him to get some reps. He's pretty excited.
Does anybody have a violin? I mean, it's the same excuse why he uses that Ryan Davis doesn't play more on defensive line is that he plays so much special teams. They're not punting 14 times a game. It's not these full-length sprints to the field. They have no use for Gerhart when all these other guys are healthy. That's clear because he only played like one snap against Indy out of 82.
Right.
So, but with TJ banged up, with Pierce, with his deal, he's on the roster, so they're going to use him.
So you're not buying the getting worn down due to his special teams duties, based on the
not for
how would you describe the guffaw?
Was that on that made the
oh
air?
Yeah,
that was good. That was good.
Me.
I was like, oh.
Special teams. There we go. All right, Gus Bradley taking a look across the sideline to the Houston Texans. Brian Hoyer, Ryan Mallett, what has he seen from the two Houston quarterbacks?
I see very similar things, because they came in midstream. But, Hoyer looked pretty good now. He ran off some completions and did some good things. He's got good poise in the pocket. And, Hopkins, he's the leading target receiver in the league.
Yeah, DeAndre Hopkins is man among boys right now, among wide receivers in the National Football League, just about as good as anybody out there. And that includes everybody, okay, including Julio Jones, for what he's been able to do this year. Ryan Mallett's a knucklehead. Brian Hoyer has some knucklehead factor in him. See that third and two pass that he attempted. I don't know what he attempted to do, but he basically gave the ball right back to the Colts with under 2 minutes to go on their side of the field, down by a score when they would have gone for it clearly on fourth down. So he's got the ability to implode mentally as well.
I mean, if I was a Jags, I would have rather seen Mallett.
I agree. I agree with
you. So I think one of these. So I think Hoyer can chuck it down the field because the thing he does well, he realizes who his best player is.
Yep.
And all over the field.
Yep, DeAndre Hopkins. So, making plays.
Yeah. The last 2 weeks when he's coming to the game, Hopkins becomes a real factor for that Houston offense. Gus also talked about a comment that he made earlier this week saying that he thought he may need to be more vocal out there at practice. He followed up with the Wednesday practice after that, talking about that comment yesterday.
I don't know. I think that was at the point of time. I was a little emotional. But, yeah, I think, I give credit to players. Yeah, I know. The players are good. And I give credit to the coaches, too. Like I said, we're all acting and trying to, get these things. But I don't want to take away from the positive things that we're seeing. Development of a lot of things taking place. And like I said, we just got to do it as a team and put it together. But we want to keep the strengths, to keep the things that are building. We want to ensure that they keep building. And then these things we need to correct, let's act on them and get it done.
I challenged Gus during that answer because he said this on Monday. It wasn't some kind of emotional
after the game.
I gotta get more involved. He brought it up on Monday.
He had a day to think about it.
Yeah, it's decompress, talk with everybody, and he said, "Hey, maybe I have to be more vocal, hold the guys more accountable."
That doesn't necessarily mean screaming and yelling. By the way, that's just more hands on,
It could mean, I don't like that. Run that play again.
Right. Something as simple as that, and how do you read that then? Because I understand you want to be consistent as a coach because players, when you start trying to flip-flop around your methodology, they think you're going into panic mode, whatever the case may be. And it's tougher to go from being Mr. Friendly to Mr. Tough Guy. You can always go from Mr. Tough Guy to being Mr. Friendly, and they're going to lap that up. But is Gus hearing the criticisms out there and letting it impact his thought process even momentarily on Monday? Because you've heard this now for a while, that where's Gus getting ticked off? I want to see emotion out of Gus. I want this. I want that. Why isn't he holding these guys accountable? And that seemed like almost a direct response to that line of questioning. And now he said, well, after thinking about it for a couple of days, we're back to business as usual.
I mean, it just shows you that he's, you know, not going to be somebody who maybe he's changed 180. Maybe in practice yesterday he was ripping guys. He just didn't want to bring it up.
Right.
I doubt that. But you know, I was standing 2 feet from him after the game on Sunday. He had fire coming out of his eyes. I'm thinking, okay, some heads are going to roll.
Right, he was ticked.
He was ticked. I said, okay, maybe this is a lineup change. Maybe this is a, you know, redelegation of coaching staff duties. He got it. You know, at that point, he sounded like a guy that said, uh-oh, I better do something. Instead, he's done nothing.
What would you have done? If there was a change to be made, whether, you know, we heard a lot of people suggest starting on the post-game show on Sunday, so he needs to make an example of somebody. Somebody's got to be gone. Or would you have done something like that? Or would you have maybe taken some of the defensive duties on yourself? Would you have, you know, shuffled the responsibilities of the coaching staff, if not outright the coaches themselves?
That's where I would have started, and that's what he should have done last offseason.
Which is what?
He should have found somebody else, if not him, to call the defense. He made the he admitted his mistake with Jed Fish, fired him. I think at this point, if I'm Gus, and I tweeted this after the game on Sunday, is this is my only shot to be an NFL head coach, most likely. I don't want to be fired on January 5th and saying, I should have done this, I should have done that. I want to be able to say, I exhausted every single avenue. If that means handing off the play calling to Todd Wash or Dwayne Walker or whatever, that's something. If it's Gus taking over the play calling, something, you got to do something to give you a spark. And cutting a guy who's not playing well, that could do it, but that doesn't seem like they're going to do that. I mean, I would have cut Clemens weeks ago. He has 1 sack in 5 games. He didn't even appear on the stat sheet, and this guy gets a day off yesterday.
Yeah.
His day off was Sunday. So,
Ryan O'Howard's been
drumroll.
Saving that one. That was good.
But
that was good.
More to the point on Gus is, you know, if you don't do nothing, if you don't do anything, okay, you're consistent in your approach to have it as a status quo week. But also, okay, if I'm a player, I know I can commit a penalty. I know I can line up right. I know I can miss 3 tackles. I'm still going to play. So at some point, you have to do something to shake the team out of what their doldrums are right now, because the approach that they're taking isn't working.
And you do have to balance it with, you know, as Gus said, it's tolerate until you can replace league, right? So sometimes you tolerate things because you don't have a better alternative, right? Mm-hmm. And to make an example and say, I'm going to sit down player X because he's been making mistakes, when you know that the next guy up is going to be even worse off for you out there, even with the mistakes that the first guy's making, I think you find yourself in a tough position sometimes when you don't have a good alternative to turn to.
Well, how about this? Let's not cut players then, okay, because they haven't done that. Are you telling me that Chris Smith can't be more effective than Chris Clemens on Sunday? I'd make Clemens inactive.
I'm not telling you can't
so,
be. I get that.
You know,
if the guy's not doing anything, then maybe the next guy can't do any worse.
Yeah, and if Jonathan Cyprian keeps missing tackles, maybe he sees the bench.
Right.
That would be bold by this administration.
I agree, but too inconsistent for Sip. And the shame is he came off what many felt was his best game in 2+ years here.
So, I mean, my thing is, and I told Gus this, is, okay, I get that you're not going to cut guys or rearrange the coaching staff, but how about rearranging the playing time to see what other guys can do? Because you never know when you might find lightning in a bottle.
Let's get a quick call in before we break. Alex in Mandarin, first up today on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Alex. How are you?
What's up, guys? How you doing?
What's up?
Just one thing also about Bortles for the future. I think everyone just needs to know this is our guy for the next 5-10 years from what it looks like. The improvement he's had, I think, has been phenomenal. But for this week, what do you guys think they need to do to stop Arian Foster from running all over us? And also, Brian Walters, X-Factor this week. And shout-out to my property. That's all I'm going to say.
All right, thank you. I didn't get who the shout out was to.
I didn't get that. I like Walters. classic third receiver. I mean, if Mark Kiesley ever gets healthy, I wouldn't put him on the field. This guy seems like he's found a niche. In terms of Arian Foster, he hasn't gotten going yet. You know, one of these
you got to be careful of him in the passing game because he was a factor in the passing game last week. But now, you know, he had about 8 or 10 carries his first game back, had more of a workload, didn't look like he had his burst back yet, but didn't look like he was injured at the same time. And, you know, ultimately was able to get involved through the passing game. So you wonder now with a week and a half if you're not going to get more of the representative true Arian Foster this week. And coming off a game where Doug Martin and Charles Sims did what they did to you, I think you got to be concerned with that. So
big time concern.
All right, we'll take a timeout. We'll come back, get more of your calls if you're so inclined at 641-1010. We'll also check in on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. Your question of the day brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships is this. Which of these three injured Jags do they need back most this week? Denard Robinson, Cinderic Marks, Paul Posluszny. Weigh in on Twitter at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at Ryan O'Halloran. It's Jaguars today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. All right, Jaguars Today rolls on this Thursday live at Everbank in the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios. Coming up in about 15 minutes, the state in football and the Honda drive around the NFL. John Harris, Texans sideline reporter, will join us next hour in about 35 minutes or so. You're off to London, what, midweek next week?
Yeah, leave Wednesday, land there Thursday morning.
Land there Thursday morning. What time are you taking off?
I think like 1:30 Wednesday afternoon.
Oh, so you're out of here, man. You're no O'Halloran next week. We'll have to maybe we'll be able to check in with you.
You could call me next Thursday. I'll be on the ground. It'll be like
okay, let's do that.
3 o'clock.
Yeah, we'll do that.
Yeah,
we'll do that. So, getting in ahead, is there work to be done for you? Do you get a day in London to kind of chill, or do you have things you need to take care of?
I'll have things to take care of. I may go to Bill's practice. I may work ahead on some other stuff. So, but mostly that first day, as you know, you don't feel great.
Bill's going in for the full week.
I think they are.
Yeah.
The big thing is I'm going a day early, so when these guys land on Friday and have stuff Friday morning, I've already be there and can meet the team there.
If the Jags lose this game next week, do they ask for the bye week preceding the London game and go for 2 weeks, or do they go on Sunday morning? Which way would they go here? They're trying it.
I mean, this is the third different wave they've done it, and I think this is as late as you can go.
Yeah, I think
In theory.
Right. You go Thursday, you get in Friday, you basically have a walk-through.
So, I mean, they like to think that the people on the plane are better than the first 2 years. Yeah,
granted,
maybe that'll help.
Oh, you would think it's not just about the travel schedule. Yeah. Yes, I would agree with that.
Well,
now,
sure, and they had a lead against Dallas until A. Sanders fumbled the ball at his own goal line.
They did.
Remember that. Oh, that's right.
You know, had he not fumbled it, does that mean they would win the game? I don't know.
Who knows?
It kind of snowballed on them at that point. But they started great. They really did. They started well. They had the lead. They got a stop, and there they were, and then, ugh. Should I send you some salt and pepper, or what do you need over there? I know you're not a big fan of the
ranch dressing.
Is that the key?
That's what I need.
Ranch dressing. All right, we'll hook you up, man. We got a Publix down in my neck of the woods. It's closing in 10 days, something like that. They're redoing the store, so it's going to close for like a year. Oh, yeah, Publixes don't close, right?
They're a year?
Yeah, it's going to... Right, I know, right? It's going to close for like a year, and the next closest one is miles and miles away from where I live. Maybe I'll stop every day after work and spending my money on stuff, but they're all out of Caesar salad dressing now.
Oh.
They're slowing down on
inventory.
Reordering
okay.
stuff, right? So, but they had plenty of ranch, and I thought of you as I bought a Caesar salad the other day and had ranch with my Caesar salad. So there you have it. I know you love your ranch dressing.
But the hotel we're staying at is the same one as last year, and the restaurant there. Great French fries, great onion rings.
Well, there you go. What else do you need, man? You're all set up. You would have loved it if you were at the spot that the Jags stayed at last year, because they really did. They brought in so much stuff, you know, their own condiments and everything.
They did have bigs and chips.
They had chips. They had, you know, protein bars. They had everything. But they had, it was truly like an American buffet every day. And, you know, look, whatever. I thought the food was fine. When I went over there, I didn't think it was that big of a deal.
That's fine.
You know, whatever. As long as you can find your fries and rings, you're happy.
And iced coffees and stuff like that.
That's important. All right, let's get to Blake Bortles talking about the biggest thing he hoped to get out of a normal Wednesday practice yesterday.
You know, I think it's just kind of, it's your first day to go through a base game plan and the stuff. You know, we're not completely rolling over everything we do from week to week, but there are some new things in there. So to get live reps at that during practice is huge, you know, especially for me as a young guy that hasn't done a whole lot, right, as far as first year in the system. So, you know, I need those reps. I need to go through that and see that and protections and concepts and everything.
Coming out of the game, we're all like, Blake's got a bad shoulder. What's the status going to be? And he's the last guy you're worried about at this point in time now, right? I mean, he's just like, whatever. It's going to be a little sore. I'm going to play. Never was a question. There you go.
And I asked him which play he got hurt because he got sacked six times.
Six times, right.
He said it was on the scramble at the end of the first half where he went straight down the field, made a guy miss, the another guy hit him, landed on him. So he played the second half with it. So, I mean, we always figured he's a tough guy, but, you know.
Adrenaline's a marvelous thing.
What he said.
As well, you know. So there you have it.
Yeah, Julius Thomas had a couple catches in his debut for the Jacksonville Jaguars on Sunday as well. And Bortles was asked if Julius had done some things that went unnoticed outside of those two catches on Sunday.
Yeah, definitely. You know, he should have had more than two. You know, definitely missed him on a touchdown. But, you know, it was kind of our plan to get him the ball. You know, got him the, I think it was the first third down or maybe second series when we got him a quick short catch. And then got him another one on a scramble drill. But, you know, I think he's a special player, super talented, really smart guy, and does a lot of really good things that I think are going to really help this offense out.
Two parts on Thomas, and one, I think the guys on radio during the game were talking about this. Blake was looking for him. You could see he was like first option, and then Blake would move on. Second thing is, talking to somebody here last week, I said, when Thomas comes back, how are defenses going to account for him? And this person thought that it'd almost be a show me first.
Right.
So I think there's going to be an opportunity for him to have a big game maybe this week.
I agree with you. That right now you'd say, hey, we got to make sure Hearns and Robinson don't get going rolling here, and let's see where Thomas is at. And if he starts beating us, we try to make an adjustment at that point.
Yeah, so I think that's why he's going to be a part of the plan this week. And, you know, not to hitch is, you know, get him moving north and do it that way instead of having him catch
it. Let him run 20 yards, catch it, and if you get anything extra after that, that's fine.
So, that's what, if I'm a Jaguar fan, that's what I'm looking forward to, is I think this quarterback has hit a rhythm with his two receivers, and I think the tight end is going to be effective on Sunday.
He really is a smart guy, too. When Blake says that, Tony and I have talked about this a bunch. He is one of the more impressive individuals. Every time I talk to him, I'm reminded, man, this guy really is on the ball. He's really thoughtful about the game and his approach to the game. And, you know, really even talking to him yesterday, I think the Jag fans will enjoy the interview because it's almost like a calming presence in that, hey, look, I've been there, done that. I've been around offenses that have gotten rolling. I know we're very close. He goes, the wins, that's the last piece of the puzzle, but it's there that he really feels that, you know, we're so close to putting it all together. And, you know, I don't know if he's right or not, but in talking to him, you get that sense that at least he's seen it done well at a high level, you know, and it gives you a little bit more confidence listening to him.
And you look at that red zone stuff last week. These weren't one-yard runs. I mean, these were 10, 12, 13-yard passes. And those two passes, one to Robinson, one to Hearns, over the middle, those were big league throws in coverage between safety. So be encouraged by him.
One more thought from Blake before we break here. And he talked about just practicing now, as you talked about, Ryan, you know, being able to go out there full go and having Julius Thomas a part of those practices.
A ton. You know, I think that's kind of a situation where the more we're together, the better we get. And, you know, we've only had a limited time really together to kind of be able to throw and get on the same page. And I think, you know, he's done a great job in the short time that we have. So, you know, I'm super excited about, you know, being able to have him for the rest of the season and kind of build on that.
All right, we'll talk more about Blake, and we'll hear more from Blake coming up momentarily, but we come back with the state in football with the Honda Drive around the NFL. John Harris coming up in just a little bit. You're a Houston Texan sideline reporter for Texan Radio and TV. He'll weigh in on the state of that franchise undergoing yet another quarterback change, flip-flopping back and forth, Hoyer to Mallett, back to Hoyer once again. Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Hauer, and Fat Tony here with you. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. On this date, in 1933, the Philadelphia Eagles played their first NFL game. Tony, anyone want to guess who they played it against?
The Giants.
It's always against the Giants. First, everything's against the Giants back then. They lose to the Giants 56-0.
We got them!
They hung Lawrence Taylor on them back then in 1933. 1987, the NFL Players Association ordered an end to a 24-day strike, which delivered 3 weeks of scab football to the National Football League. In 2000, St. Louis quarterback Kurt Warner completed 24 out of 40 passes for 313 yards and three touchdowns. That performance is record-tying sixth straight 300-yard game in the Rams' 45-29 victory over Atlanta. I looked it up. The others with six, and six still stands as a record. Steve Young did it for San Francisco back in 1998. Rich Gannon, during his MVP season of 2002, did it six consecutive times as well, and he holds a single season record with 10 such 300-yard passing games. Birthdays of note on this date. Happy 62nd to Joe Klecko. Got to meet him at the Super Bowl, I believe it was this past year. Four Pro Bowls and two first-team All-Pro nods for a member of the New York Sack Exchange, the Jets D-line that included Mark Gastineau and Marty Lyons in the early 80s. And happy birthday to the guy that delivered us, Luke Polanco. Maybe Blaine Gabbert turns 26 years young today, and a great deal to get the versatile Polanco in pocket for the sixth-round pick acquired for his services.
I didn't know where you were going with that.
You didn't, did you? You thought maybe I'd go with Caldwell because he drafted Polanco. No, it was Blaine Gabbert's 26th birthday today. Happy birthday, Blaine. This date in football history presented by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry, located on Gate Parkway. If you need cosmetic work done or you're just in the market for a family dentist, call Dr. McCall's office. Schedule an appointment. You get 10% off all first-time customers' initial visits. 620-9225 is the number. In the meantime, visit jamesjmccall.com to get a complete list of the comprehensive care services that they offer. That is this date in football history.
Now, the Honda Drive around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
New York Giants cornerback Princeton Mukamara has a partially torn pectoral muscle that is expected to keep him sidelined for the next 3 to 4 weeks. The 3-2 New York Giants travel to Philadelphia to take on the 2-3 Eagles on Monday Night Football this week. The NFL has fined Pittsburgh Steelers defensive end Cameron Hayward for honoring his late father on his eye black. Cameron, the son of Craig Ironhead Hayward, who died in 2006 after a battle with cancer, wore the words Ironhead on his eye black to honor his dad. The NFL has fined him $5,787 for doing so. The NFL doesn't make any exceptions to its uniform policy, as we discussed yesterday with the story regarding D'Angelo Williams wanting to wear pink all season to honor his late mother. But Hayward is appealing the fine anyway and wants to continue to wear the eye black with his father's name. And Thursday Night Football to kick off Week 6 tonight, the 5-0 Atlanta Falcons are in New Orleans to take on the 1-4 Saints. Julio Jones listed as probable for the game today.
Yeah, he should go, which should give you full confidence in playing him, whether that's on FanDuel, your daily fantasy stuff, or in your season-long leagues. Of course you play Julio every time he suits up, but good to know he's probable, which means he's probably not on a snap count
probably
tonight.
Not.
So what are the colors of the Detroit Lions?
Silver.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not as easy as blue. Honolulu blue.
But it's blue, right? It's, yeah. It's a version of blue. Okay. So you, that's a good call, by the way. Honolulu blue is absolutely correct. That's really good by you. I just would have accepted any silver and blue would have been fine. Blue and silver. Did you see Matt Stafford? Tony's talking about the uniform code of the NFL. They tried to fine Matt Stafford for wearing blue shoes, which match his uniform.
Yeah. And I thought you were allowed to wear a team color.
You are, and he appealed it and won it, but he said the explanation, you basically have to be a rocket scientist to understand what percentage of your shoe is allowed to be blue or needs to be blue for it to be, I mean, really?
Why do they care?
I guess they want everybody to look alike and all that, fine, but this seems like
they're
looking for reasons.
Yeah, like the eye black you can almost understand because you don't want people putting like an advertisement on their eye black, right?
Okay.
Like you can understand that, but this is a guy who's trying to honor his father who happened to play in this league as well and was a very well-known player. That doesn't make any sense. Like, where they draw the lines with this kind of stuff is just ridiculous.
When I covered the Redskins, Tony McGee was the uniform cop, so he was usually a former player. He'd sit up in the second row over by us, and you'd hear him during the game with a phone on the sidelines, tell 22 to pull his socks up. Tell 42 he's got to have that jersey tucked in.
Really? What would they have said to Earl Campbell, by the way? Whose jersey right, was always untucked and falling off of his body, getting ripped off of his body. Larry Zonka, guys like that back in the day. Hey, whatever, man. I guess, you know, we always, every time it comes up, we point out how silly and extreme it is. I wonder what they would do. Remember when... what am I drawing a blank? Jim McMahon, right? Used to wear the headbands. Roselle, he wrote on there.
Pluto.
And all that stuff. What did he write?
It was Pluto, right?
Did he write Pluto? What was that?
So.
Like where he was supposedly from? Or
something like that.
Okay. But... Well, I remember him doing the Roselle thing, and he probably did a few other things. And he was able to get away with it, right? He, at least at the time, the policies weren't as strict. And maybe he got fined. I don't recall. But he'd do it on the sideline. I wonder what would happen if you carved a message into like the side of your hair. Right? Because that's your body. That's not your uniform. That's your body. Right? I mean, it'd be the same thing if you got a tattoo. I guess they could make you cover up a tattoo if they didn't like it.
Like if Tom Brady on Sunday night had it shaved in his head.
Goodell sucks.
Bite me, Roger.
Yes! What if he did? What if he did? That's his hair. Would that, I mean, would
I
that...
would say no. I would say, hey, I do.
Right.
Whatever
you, how can you, right? This is the way I choose to wear my hair. I want someone to test this now, you know? Any Jaguar willing to test this, I'm not willing to pay his fine, though. That's the problem. You know, maybe we could take up a collection here, and then we could vote. We need a willing Jaguar. Then we need to take up a collection, whatever the uniform fine is, probably about $5,000, something like that.
Well, they
right?
apparently don't care what you do with your hair based on the D'Angelo Williams story, along with the fact that Odell Beckham is allowed to wear it that way, and Antonio Brown is as well. Just the idea that the NFL doesn't care that they have athletes that look completely absurd.
Well, we definitely odd-looking hairstyles, but yeah. Having a message written into it, I wonder how that would go over.
What you should do is look at the roster for the Jaguars, okay, cross off everybody who was drafted.
Okay.
Okay, then you go to an undrafted rookie that maybe just joined the team and could use a little tip money. You know, so narrow it down that way.
Like, when you say use a little tip money, you're suggesting we pay him to do it?
Well, you collect the money to pay the fine and give him a little something.
Or if he doesn't get fined, he gets to keep the cash.
Yeah.
Right. But then the Jag fans, we get to vote on the message as well. That might be where you get
no profanity, people.
No. I was thinking there'd be a 4-letter word followed by a 3-letter word. Think about it. This shouldn't be that difficult.
No, I got it.
You know. All right. Let's move on to some more from Blake Bortles before we have John Harris join us. He's sideline reporter for the Houston Texans, and he'll be coming up in about 10 minutes or so. Blake Bortles talking about why this team has had success running the hurry up offense.
You know, I think it's something that we do. There's a big emphasis on it. We just went through it. We'll go through it again this week. Frank will give a presentation on it this afternoon. So I mean, there's kind of a big emphasis on that, and I think our guys do a really good job. We have our 2-minute package and the things we do well, and guys understand it. I think a lot of things that go on in 2-minute, every now and then it kind of becomes backyard football again, and I think our guys are really good getting in the scramble drill. When I'm able to get outside the pocket, guys do a really good job of finding holes and getting open.
They give you a preview of Sunday's Times Union. That's one of our stories this week is, okay, they've done it well at the end of first halves. Why not try it in other parts of the game?
Right, exactly. And do you get the sense that that's going to happen? That's a question that gets brought up by fans all the time.
Yeah.
Of course, that's kindergarten stuff.
Yeah.
I say tongue-in-cheek.
I asked Greg Olson that yesterday. He goes, "It's you know, he didn't say get out of here." So I think a lot of depends on the. I mean, it's almost like it has to be like the perfect situation and score your defense. You know, has to be like ready to go back out there in
right,
case things
right.
don't right.
That, so. That is a factor sometimes. You know, if your defense, if you've had some three and outs or what have you.
I wonder why they don't do it like. You watch some of the other offenses in the league. It's not necessarily a hurry up. It's a we work at the pace we want to work at, and if we like the matchups that we have, then we're not going to let you substitute. Mm-hmm. So we get back up to the line quick, and then we figure out what we want to do from there. I know New England does it that way. Green Bay does it that way. The Giants, which have been really effective with that, have done it that way this year. And you've watched Eli Manning be so much more comfortable in that Giants offense. I just wonder why it. I don't need it to be at that breakneck pace that you do in the 2 minute. I don't know why they don't let Blake call the game from the line of scrimmage more than they are right now.
Or even if you're setting in the play.
Right.
Do it from the line of scrimmage, right? When you're at home and you can hear what's going on. Now they haven't been home in a few weeks.
I have a feeling that this may be the next layer that they introduce. You know, let's face it, they had some other issues they need to get a hold of, like red zone and
right.
scoring points. Okay, you cross that barrier. Okay.
Let's hope it stays where you put it, right?
And you know, let's have the offense show some urgency at other times than when they just need to.
All right, he is Ryan O'Halloran of the Florida Times Union on Twitter at Ryan O'Halloran with Fat Tony. I'm Mike Dempsey. Jaguars Today rolls on. More from Blake coming up in a little bit. But we'll head out to Houston. Coming up next, John Harris is the sideline reporter for the Texans radio and TV networks, and he works with HoustonTexans.com as well. He'll join us next to preview Sunday's game as the Jags and the Texans each in search of their second victory of the season. Jaguars Today continues live in a moment from EverBank on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Welcome our next guest to the Metro Diner Chat Counter.
These are delicious!
On 1010XL, Metro Diner, where the locals eat.
There's that which you called for, Jeff. They roll him out of the pocket. Bortles runs to the right, fires it into the end zone. Diving attempt. Touchdown, Jacksonville! A diving catch on the rollout. Lagerman called for it. Bortles delivered it. Allen Hurns with the touchdown.
That from last year's 27-13 defeat at the hands of the Houston Texans, December 7th. Not a happy birthday present for me. Plan ahead, people. That's why I dropped that in there. All right, Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran, and Fat Tony here with you on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Let's welcome in John Harris, good old Jacksonville guy, but he's sideline reporter for the Houston Texans TV and radio networks. What's up, John? How are you?
What's going on, guys? Yeah, that actually happened about 16 minutes in front of me, and I remember it down to you, but great catch, and that guy obviously has been playing his best out this year, so he's going to be a tough one to stop on Sunday, no question.
Hey, John, look, they say if you have two quarterbacks, you don't have any. What's the story? How confident are they that they finally are going to settle in with Brian Hoyer for at least the rest of this season?
If it's the guy that we saw in the second half against Atlanta, we saw for 2.5 quarters against Indianapolis, then I think that's the guy. But it's a matter of consistency. But, you know, I think, and most coaches will tell you this, but I think when you're talking about a unit or a team, and a quarterback, it's everybody involved. You've got to have consistent pass protection, which it was really, really good Thursday against the Colts. It was great pass protection, and the receivers got open. Yeah, but they didn't have a run game, so they really were kind of one-dimensional. And I think this offense and this team is so much better, as you guys have found out, when you can run it and you can throw it and you can have balance in your offensive scheme, you can be that much better offensively. But I think if Brian Hoyer can just relax, just settle in, and relax early in the game, he'll be fine. And then once he gets his confidence, as he's got his last couple of games, I think he'll be okay. Look, DeAndre Hopkins is turning into one of the better wide receivers in the NFL. He's getting targeted, man, I don't know, 15 to 18 times a game. So that's a nice security blanket to have. Other receivers, hopefully Cecil Shorts will be ready to go on Sunday. But the rookies have stepped up strong in Mumphrey. So he'll have some weapons. He's got guys to throw it to. He just has to get comfortable early in the game and not have that back-breaking mistake as he did against Kansas City, and then obviously not have one like he had at the end of the game with the Indianapolis Colts.
John, you mentioned Hopkins. Obviously, first in receiving yards, second in catches entering week six. Are they moving him around the field a lot more? Is he added a lot to his route running repertoire, or are they just finally finding him?
Well, I think it's sort of a natural progression for Hop. He's in his third year. I think he's learned. I think some of the things you talked about. I think his route running has gotten better. He's gotten more comfortable in this offense. Obviously, there's no Andre Johnson, but even though Andre had a great night the other night, I think watching Andre have that great night would have been more, I guess, detrimental for Houston Texans fans. But you saw Jalen Strong have two touchdowns. Keith Mumphrey had a couple of nice catches, and you knew that Cecil Shorts was coming back soon. So the wide receiver depth, I think, is better than it's been. But Hopkins, obviously, is the star of that. But I think, you know, in a guy's third year, of playing the game, he knows how to get open. His route running has gotten better. I think the passing game concepts that the Texans display are pretty solid, but they'll move him around. They'll try and find a matchup that works and try and isolate him. But he's got a catch radius a lot like Allen Robinson. He can go get it wherever it is. So even if you feel like you're on him like glue, that ball's anywhere near, and he's got such strong hands that he can rip it away from a defensive back. So he's got a lot of things working for him. He's not the fastest guy in the world. He's not a blazer, but he sells his routes very, very well, and he's become truly a star, the star that they really wanted him to be when they drafted him a few years ago. And they said he's going to replace Andre Johnson one day, and we all went, whoa, 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 let's be careful with that. But that really is coming to fruition, that Hop has become the man in the passing game here for Houston.
Arian Foster returned a couple weeks ago. He's been an effective receiver for the Texans, but really hasn't gotten it going on the ground, just 40 yards last week. How much of an emphasis is being placed on trying to get Arian Foster going on the ground this week coming to Jacksonville?
Well, there's no question. You guys can see with T.J. Yeldon, the way that Yeldon's run the football, you know, have that balance. And last year, this offense was so much better when there was a balance in both the run game and the pass game, and they just haven't gotten there yet. And they've been able to use Foster as a receiver and get those mismatches. And, you know, if he catches the ball going across the middle the other night on the very first drive, which is rare for him because he's got receiver-like hands, if he catches that ball, he walks in the end zone. That whole game against Indianapolis is probably different from that point forward. But, you know, he's such a good receiver. They want to get those matchups. But quite honestly, the offensive line, from a run-blocking standpoint, just hasn't been where it was last year. And I'm not sure why. I'm not sure what's missing. But they just haven't, as an offensive line, run-blocking-wise, performed well. Now, pass protection's been very, very good. They have not given up many sacks. But I think it's a definite emphasis for them to try and get Arian Foster going on the ground, or whether it's Alfred Blue or whether it's Jonathan Grimes coming back off an injury. They got to find somebody to run the football, but they need somebody's up front to start opening some holes, and I'm not sure that Jacksonville's the type of defense that you can do that against if they're playing like we know they can play. We know they didn't play that way last week, but Doug Martin piled up some yards. But we know it's a pretty good defensive front that typically gives the Texans some trouble. So I don't know that the run game is really going to click this week. We got to hope that it does, but I just don't know that Jacksonville is the type of team that you can run the ball against with that front six or front seven.
Yeah, well, prior to last week, they were solid against the run, but Paul Posluszny's status up in the air against, and Derek Marks may be back this week, but if he is, it'll probably be on a snap count, John. So we're watching very intently the health status of that front seven here. Let's move to your front seven a little bit. Watching that game last Thursday night, I thought the Colts did a terrific job, really double and even triple teaming J.J. Watt and at times Jadeveon Clowney as well, really neutralize those guys, chipping them with tight ends and backs and giving them different looks. How frustrating was it from the Texan perspective that those guys couldn't get to Matt Hasselbeck at least enough to slow him down?
Bingo, Mike, you hit it. I mean, you hit it right on the head. I mean, that's exactly what it is. And, you know, Jadeveon Clowney has played, I think, given what he went through last year. And unfortunately, in that Colts game, he got rolled up by, you know, 75. He got rolled up on by Bernard McKinney. But, you know, it's a front seven. Hey, well, let's just look at all defense. I was just talking to Andy Kidd, athletic director over at Episcopal, a little while ago when he heard I was going to be on. He gave me a call. We were talking about it. This is a defense that can put at one point 8 first-round draft picks out on the field. They can put 8. And there are times where they have 7 out there. I don't know if they put all 8 at one point, but they, I mean, that's a lot of money and a lot of draft picks put out there. And yet 40-year-old stick off his deathbed, Matt Hasselbeck, put 27 points on them. And Andre Johnson, who wasn't good enough for their offense, had 2 touchdowns against them. Frank Gore ran for them. It was like old folks home time against, you know, a defense that's got a lot of money and a lot of draft picks invested in it. So there's been a lot of frustrating times for this defense. But I thought Pep Hamilton did a really nice job of making sure that 99 didn't beat them. It was 2 guys. It was 3 guys. It was chips. It was doubles. It was whatever. It moved the pocket a few times. And then when it gets frustrating, and you guys know this, when you get frustrated with something, then you try and go outside the box a little bit. And so you try and go outside the plan. And so that's happened a few times. Guys have tried to go outside the plan because, well, I'm getting hit by 2 guys, or, well, this guy's blocking me and I don't want him to block me, so I'm going to go this way. And then they're doing stuff outside the game plan, and that's really sort of hurt them. They're getting away from what they did well last year, and I think that's really hurt them. But with this talent that's on this defense, there should be no way that Kansas City scored 27, that Carolina scored 24, that Atlanta put up 48, and that, you know, this team last week, Indianapolis, no matter how many weapons they've got, put up 27. It just shouldn't happen. And Jacksonville, of all of them, with the ability to have run-pass balance, you know, Blake gets hot throwing the football, then, you know, TJ's going to run the ball. So, I mean, this offense worries me a bit because this defense is just, they're not at that point finger stage, but you can tell that there's sort of a lack of trust, seemingly, in guys doing their jobs. And Belichick says it all the time, and we kind of scoff at it, but it's so true. Just do your job. Do what you're supposed to do. If you have contain, contain. If you got backside A, you got backside A. If you're playing cover 4, you play cover 4. I mean, you got to do your job. You can't try and play hero ball. You got to make sure you're doing your job. And if you do, then maybe all the pieces will come together and you can play a solid ball game. But until that happens, I'll sort of believe it when I see it.
Hey, John, one of those pieces missing is takeaways. 2 of them tied for last in the league. How do they fix that?
That's a great question. I mean, take it a step further. They have, I think they've had 8, I think they've, on offense, they've had 8 or 9 turnovers. And the opposing team has scored 49 points off those turnovers.
Wow.
And Texas have had 2 turnovers and generated 3 points. It's the worst point turnover differential in the entire league. I mean, it's a killer. There's no question. And it's really just sort of crystallized being in the building the last 2 years, because last year it was all about turnovers. They generated, I think, 34, 35 turnovers and paint-off turnovers as well. They were, I think, 3rd in the league last year in point turnover differential in between the Packers and the Patriots. And, I mean, that should tell you something about turnovers in this league. Well, this year, not only are they not generating the turnovers, they're turning the ball over. And then beyond that, the defense is then not answering the sudden change situation and has given up 49 points off of those 8 or 9 turnovers or whatever it is. So it's a killer. If you just don't turn the ball over and you don't put your defense on a short field, you know, Tampa Bay scored 19 points on them. Why? Because there was 1 turnover in the game and that was it. And I think Tampa Bay generated a field goal on that. That was it. So if you don't turn the ball over and you do your job, you've got enough talent in the building to win football games. But after the first 5 games of the year, it just hasn't happened.
Some injuries in the wide receiver core for this Texans team, too. It looks like Cecil Shorts may be good enough to be back this weekend against Jacksonville. What's the timeline with Nate Washington? Is there any chance he's on the field this weekend for Houston?
You know, I don't think he's going to be. He hasn't practiced for a couple of weeks. When he went down in Atlanta, man, he went down in a heap. So, and I've been there. I've had an exact same injury. It probably takes a good 2-3 weeks. So I would imagine Nate is not going to be on the field this week. But the good news, A, Cecil Shorts hopefully is going to be back. And just talking to him the last couple of weeks, this is when he really wanted to get back to kind of show. And even though I think he left Jacksonville and with a good feeling with all that he had done in Jacksonville, when you go back to the place that you're from, where you grew up, where you became, you know, an NFL player, you want to show them that you still have got it. Andre Johnson showed that to the Texans, and I think Cecil definitely wants to do that on Sunday. Now, how much he'll play still remains to be seen, dealing with the shoulder. But the good part of all this is that with opportunity, Jalen Strong stepped up Thursday night. Keith Mumphrey has been a pleasant surprise, the 5th-round pick out of Michigan State. So they've got, and if Cecil does play, they've got 4 solid wide receiver I don't think it'll be a dire without Nate. They're nice to have him back, but I think the fact that Strong has stepped up, Mumphrey has been sharp, and the fact that Cecil's back, I feel pretty good about what the wide receiver core will be on Sunday.
All right, he is John Harris. He's the sideline reporter for both the Houston Texans TV and radio networks, and you can check him out at HoustonTexans.com and on Twitter at JHarrisFootball. Two teams desperately in need of a win this Sunday. John, safe travels, but we hope you don't enjoy the trip, if you know what we mean.
Yeah, absolutely. And I hope on the other side of it that you guys hate us being there. You know what I mean?
Understood, brother. We appreciate the time, man. And after this week, enjoy the rest of this football season, all right?
Absolutely, guys. Appreciate you having me on. Thank you.
Hey, buddy. Thanks,
hey, John.
John Harris with the Houston Texan Radio and TV Networks weighing in on the Jaguars' opponent for Week 6 in the National Football League. When we return, we'll take a look at the Fan Feedback Spotlight brought to you by the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships, asking you today which of these three injured Jaguars would be most key to helping them get a victory this week if they were able to return. Denard Robinson, of course, you got T.J. Yeldon banged up, and his status is up in the air. Sindarik Marks hasn't played all year. We know how good he was before the injury last year. And Paul Posluszny, you noticed his absence last week as the Bucs were able to really get that running game cranked up. So share your thoughts with us on Twitter on that, at MD_1010XL, at Ryan O'Halloran, at 1010XL Fat Tony, and also on the Jaguars Today Facebook page as well. Back with more Jaguars Today live at EverBank in a moment on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, coming down the stretch here at Jaguars Today, Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran, and Fat Tony here with you on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Jags and Houston coming up in 3 days here at EverBank. First home game in a month for the Jacksonville Jaguars. So we'll see. I have a feeling the turnout will be good for this one, right? Because they're hungry to see their team, but need to win some games to make sure that some of that fan apathy doesn't set in, you know?
Yeah, and first home game in a month, last home game in a month.
Right.
So I think that's it's big. You're playing a team that's also 1-4, and as our last segment showed, they have a ton of issues. And so, you know, see if you can get up and keep them.
Beat down. A struggling team. Just yeah. Beat a struggling
they
team.
Couldn't do it last week.
Right. Get your second win of the year. And how about that? I mean, Tyrod Taylor sprained MCL. You could be getting EJ Manuel in London next week, right? Mm-hmm. You just don't know. And EJ Manuel has not been a very good NFL quarterback. It's still a good Buffalo defense, and they've got some nice components around EJ Manuel, but that would be a big step down based on the way Tyrod Taylor has played most of the season.
It would. And, you know, Buffalo has been up and down this year. So that would suggest they lose this week, and then, you know, Buffalo's been.
What about this week? They got Cincy this week.
Cincy,
that's a
yeah.
tough game.
So, you know, Bills are beating themselves a lot with penalties. So, but about this game, Jaguars tackling. You know, they cut down the penalties. You got to line up right.
Tackling would be good though. Yeah. That's, yeah. Don't miss 23 of them.
Don't put 12 on the field.
12 men, yes, on the field. Now. Sometimes it seems like that's what it takes to block J.J. Watt as I try to transition to a couple
not
more
bad.
Blake Bortles comments. You know, sometimes. You know, Bortles talked about the pair of defensive ends that the Texans are bringing to town, J.J. Watt and Jadeveon Clowney.
They're obviously super talented. You know, for the most part, they keep them on separate sides. But, you know, they're both really good players. I mean, obviously having a chance to play against J.J. Watt twice last year and Clowney in college. You know, both explosive, you know, unbelievable motors. So they're definitely two guys, you know, as well as the rest of their front seven that are really good that, you know, we're going to have to be on our game. And you know, the attention to details are going to be huge.
Watt lined up at left defensive end for all but one snap against the Colts. So that's a big test for Parnell. Clowney, obviously, on the other side. So him coming off the edge will be a test for Jokel.
Yeah, he made some mistakes in that game. Really hasn't gotten it going yet, but you see him flash the athleticism. It's obviously there, and don't let him get it rolling this week. Don't let him get it started. You know, you get the sense maybe if he has one of those two sack games, he's going to start to break out and follow that up with a lot more. Don't let it be getting underway against you this Sunday.
Yep. Bortles also asked if he's excited about this offense and the direction it seems to be going.
You know, I think it's been impressive with the things we've struggled at and made a big point of emphasis. You know, we've struggled in the red zone. Well, last week it was a huge point of emphasis. We went 5 for 5 in the red zone. I mean, I think it's cool to see things like that carry over to the game. You know, I think we've shown, you know, with the yardage and the way we move the ball, and then last week with the points we put up, that, you know, this can be the norm and it should be the norm. You know, this is where the bar should be set, and this is what we should be able to do week in and week out.
All right. Yeah.
Good quote. This should be the norm.
There you go. Yeah. Right, come to expect it, and that's part of the consistency. You know you're capable of doing it. Not do it all the time. Or, look, you're not going to score 4 touchdowns out of 5 trips every time and score on all 5 of them, but, you know, 3 out of 5, you know, 2 out of 5, something like that. It's got to be a higher percentage of sticking in the end zone. They did a very good job of that last week, which gets a little bit lost in the fact that they lost the game. And finally, Bortles talked about what he thinks the key offensively this week will be against Houston.
I think it's got to be attention to detail still. You know, we had a big play taken away by, a misaligned formation. You know, had a false start. I think things like that are things we got to continue to pay attention to eliminate. You know, obviously a turnover, 2 turnovers, that really both led to points. I think we got to continue to eliminate that stuff.
All right, there you go. A little bit from Blake Bortles and attention to detail, cleaning it up, stop beating yourself, all those themes that we've been talking about for a while now, and I think have frustrated the coaching staff and the players themselves, but they're the ones who need to clean it up. So let's see that happen this Sunday. The Fan Feedback Spotlight brought to you by the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships, celebrating their 45th year in business. Tom Bush opened the first dealership in Jacksonville of his with Tom Bush Volkswagen way back in 1970, and they were just voted for the 4th year in a row in the annual Reader's Poll, the best place to buy a car in Jacksonville, according to the folks at Folio Weekly. And they're also working together to spread awareness for Breast Cancer Month as they sponsor and participate in the Making Strides Against Breast Cancer Walk, benefiting the American Cancer Society. Also sponsor Project Pink with the Florida Times Union, and every Thursday they're out there wearing pink to raise awareness and show their commitment to breast cancer prevention as well. They bring you the Fan Feedback Spotlight, which this day is focusing on 3 injured guys and their potential return to the lineup: Denard Robinson, Derek Marks, Paul Posluszny. Who is the most vital to have back? Tony, what kind of feedback did we get?
From Cristiano: Marks, we need some pass rush badly. From Irish Jaguar: if Yeldon can't go, it's Denard. Otherwise, it's a toss-up between the 2 defenders. He said, I know, I picked all 3. From Lamar, he said, Sin, Puz, D-Rob in that order. From Joey: Puz, he makes the defense work. The other 2 are big also, though. From Eric: that's a hard question today. I'll go Puz, though an argument can be made for each. Puz is a leader. From Daniel: tough question, but I'm going with Puz. We have to stop the run. Puz helps do that. From Duval Doom: his heart says Sin, his head says Puz, and the injury report says Denard. From Bill: would say Puz after watching Armbruster last week. Marked close second because of limited snaps. From Stoff: after last week's game, clearly Posluszny got to stop Arian Foster. Hashtag paying customer. Hashtag Wembley soon. And from Isaiah: Denard Robinson.
I have very little confidence that Toby Gerhart is going to be all that effective carrying a major load. Just haven't seen it. Right? So
ever.
I agree with you. If TJ Yeldon can't go this week, which is a possibility, not practicing yesterday, how when you ask Gus, how did he phrase it when asked about TJ's availability?
Well, he wasn't out there today, so we'll see.
Kind of a we'll see, which reading the Gus language, you think is kind
not
of
good.
Less than 50%,
yeah,
maybe,
yeah,
but trending. It's still only Thursday, so we'll find out about that. So Denard was your answer because of that, right?
Because of that. He's not going to be probably won't carry 20 times, but he'll at least give you some kind of like burst if he's like healthy.
Tony, who would you select out of that trio?
Puz. Look, I think you saw the issues they had stopping the run last week for a team that had been pretty good against the run. And we talked to Jeff Loggeman early in the week, and he said you could see guys in the stadium where they were having problems communicating where they needed to be and what they needed to do on defense. And I think that speaks to Puz not being there in the middle and having Armbruster in. I don't think that he was ready for that kind of game and that kind of moment and that level of responsibility. And Puz is the guy who gets everything lined up for this football team.
That's the sad state of affairs in pro football, where a guy's out there just to line people up.
Right.
And that's why Devin McCourty got $45 million.
to make sure everybody's in the right spot.
They should be in the right spot.
Right.
I totally agree with Tony, though.
Yeah, no, because that is the circumstance. I mean, look, and this is a question. That there are people that are adamant that it's Marks. There are people that are adamant it's Posluszny. There are people selecting Denard, although it's more that they're not as adamant. They're just looking at what's the alternative. Mm-hmm. I honestly wonder, you know, with Bernard Pearson, the concussion protocol, not practicing yesterday, if TJ Yeldon can't go, if you didn't have Denard, and I think you will because he practiced in full yesterday, I wouldn't put it past the Jags to think Corey Grant would be the more effective running back than Toby Gerhardt this week.
If I'm the Jaguars, Bernard Pierce never sees the field again.
Yeah. I mean, do you let him go?
Yes.
Okay. I mean, I think that would have been the one. But is there any kind of, the guy may have been concussed, and that's why he pulled such a bonehead play?
I feel it's a convenient excuse.
So you're not buying it?
I'm buying the fact that he has a concussion. I'm suggesting that he still would have blocked the wrong guy.
I don't know. I mean, if you buy he had a concussion.
He carried twice after those two plays, so maybe he got hurt there.
Maybe he did. Maybe he did. But, then again, maybe he didn't. I don't know. I'm willing to give him a little bit of a break on that because it seems such an odd play. How can you be running downfield and all of a sudden just turn around and start blocking for the other team?
Well, I'll add this as well. He talked after the game. That never happens. If these concussion things, I mean, they're so protective of him. Say he reported symptoms earlier. It's just too convenient. I hear you.
You have seen guys, though, not have concussion symptoms show up until the following day, or at least ones that they notice. So who knows? I mean, there's no way of knowing. But I don't think it would have shocked anybody if he had been let go this week, quite frankly. Do you think it gets to that point where, I mean, how much longer does Gus go with the status quo if they don't get this thing turned around?
I think he goes till the end.
You do?
Yeah.
Gus is going to stick to his philosophical ways. I do think there's something. Look, if you're going to cut a guy because he's not performing well and you think he's not helping us, I'm fine with that. The whole sending a message thing, I don't know. I mean, if Bernard Pierce is cut, does that impact Julius Thomas? You know what I mean? Does Thurston Arbrister think, well, now I'm going to tackle better because they got rid of Bernard Pierce? I don't know if there really is that effect. And I know what people are saying. If you let people know that there are consequences to playing poorly and making mental errors, then but
I'll grant you that. And that's what they've done. But if Sunday they roll out the same guys in the same roles and it's that status quo,
it doesn't look like my guess is you're not going to see Bernard Pierce this week at all. He'll be inactive this week.
But he's the least of the issues.
Right, I hear you. There's a lot of things going on. Jags win this week? What do you think? What's your gut tell you on Thursday?
No. I'm going to pick the Texans. I think they have more better players, if that makes any sense. They're coming off a little bit extra of a mini bye. And one of these weeks, like last week, you say, well, Doug Martin is going to break out even though he had 100 the week before. Well, he busted out. So I think
that whole running game busted out.
I think the Texans are going to win.
All right, there you go, Ryan O'Halloran. What do you have coming up in the TU over the next few days?
Got some good stuff. Sunday, mentioned the hurry-up stuff. Hayes Carlin talks a little bit about Allen Hurns. And then phone call Welling today. I'll talk to Cecil Shorts for a story for Sunday. So.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off.
Cecil Shorts.
For
phone call Welling.
There you go. Phone call Welling. I was going to say, who would have thought that Ryan's appearance would be the least contentious of the week on Jaguars Today? So, hey,
we're never contentious. We just laugh.
We do laugh a lot. You can get contentious from time to time with some callers, but that's okay.
Where I would have gotten contentious, and I had it on Monday, was the Corey Grant fumble, where I would have been breaking the tie and saying, why is he on the field?
Okay. I still disagree with you.
But I did like the fact, I think it was like two segments later, a caller says, well, I want to weigh in on that Corey Grant. We've had enough.
There's nothing. We're going to change each other's minds at that point in time. And,
can we, as we do on the show, by the way, as we close it out today, can we do 20 seconds of nerd talk? because
Jurgen Klinsmann should be fired.
No, no, no. Not that level of sports nerd.
I'm going to go see Mad Max for the 17th
time. This is a Mike and I moment. This is there are rumors that Marvel Studios is getting Fantastic Four back in the family, and that there could be a new movie franchise coming in, say, around 2020, but they could be introducing Richards and some of the other characters if they get them back over the course of, say, not next year, but maybe the next 3 or 4 years to get them back under the Marvel wing.
Well, clearly, Sony's got them now. They don't know what they're doing.
Fox.
Is it Fox?
Yeah,
whatever. Whoever.
It's terrible.
I don't pay attention really who produces them, other than the fact that I know Marvel doesn't own all their own properties.
Yep.
But that was always my favorite growing up.
He could be back.
I'd like to see him.
Don't you want to see Reed Richards in this Marvel universe?
Oh, I'd like to see the whole thing in the Marvel universe. It'd be pretty good. There you go. You're 20 seconds of geek talk. Ryan, enjoy the game, and we'll hopefully check in with you live from London next week.
Very good.
There he goes, Ryan O'Halloran, folks from the Florida Times Union on Twitter, at Ryan O'Halloran. That does it for us. XL Primetime coming up next on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Now, Duval, give me two claps and a Ric Flair.
Woo! That's a great job!